Welcome to Spectator TV. I'm Fraser Nelson. Just a few hours ago, the Labour Manifesto was launched in Manchester from a Keir Starmer who is saying that wealth creation is now the theme stamped through every page of that 136-page document. Angela Rayner was up here telling us the Conservatives have proved you can't tax your way to growth. The whole party stood before us as people who have learned the lessons of what they say was a spendthrift, profligate Conservative government ready to bring moderation and stability back to Britain. So how's it going down? Well, joining me now is somebody who is not exactly a Labour supporter, but nonetheless somebody who's opposed most Conservative leaders since Ian Duncan Smith. And that's Peter Hitchens for the Mail on Sunday. Peter, thanks for joining me. Now, you seem, normally, you're leading the charge of despair against the Conservatives, but you seem to be more worried about Keir Starmer's Labour Party than almost Jeremy Corbyn's.
Look, if you want to have a quick chorus, if you hate the Tory party, clap your hands. I'll cheerfully lead it or join in. I still loathe the Tory party. But there are moments when you want to have it destroyed and thrown in the bin and carted away, and moments when actually it might be sensible to hang on. This is one of those moments. The Starmer Labour Party is very similar in character to the Blair Labour Party of 1997. You can tell just by looking at it that it has an enormous amount of menacing things in its mind to do.
Such as?
You don't know what they are. Because, well, look, think three things that the Blair government did within pretty much weeks of coming to office. Bank of England independence, the colossal raid on the pension funds, and the appointment of Alistair Campbell and Jonathan Powell to give orders to civil servants in breach of the Constitution.
Were they really calamities? Every major G7 economy in the world has got Bank of England, central bank independence, a personnel special advisor, a number 10. You're really saying the Blair government was
the appointment of Alistair Campbell to give orders to civil servants without responsibility to Parliament was a political revolution. And it's done immense and lasting damage to the neutrality of the civil service. Bank of England independence takes away government control from one of the most key decisions any government can take on interest rates. It's absurd. And the raid on pension funds, I think anybody who was remotely affected by it must recognize it was basically disastrous for the pension system, and also straightforward political robbery of people who'd saved all their lives to look after themselves in retirement.
So I'm not going to make it defensible.
All indefensible. The thing was that indefensible as they were also not announced. They just did them. And I see absolutely no reason to believe why a Starmer government won't do things of that nature as well. I wrote this morning about their constitutional plans, which nobody's interested in at all, but which are enormous and all-embracing.
Right. First of all, there's not a government in history that hasn't done more than it says in the manifesto. The manifesto is a basic. The idea of a manifesto is that if you put something in the manifesto, it will not be voted down by the House of Lords because of our conventions. The Tories in 2019 had a manifesto pledged not to increase national insurance. Rishi Sunak went on to do exactly that. But I put to you that if you want to try to say here that the Starmer government is a threat, or a particularly bad threat, these aren't exactly, you haven't got much to point to now, do you?
Well, I suppose to say I don't know the half of it, nor do you. What I do know is the character of these people. I also know what Keir Starmer is. And there's a highly dogmatic, very left-wing person.
Very left-wing person? Really? The man who's telling us that wealth creation is the centre of his manifesto?
Well, yes, this is like the great conversation between Mr. Toad and Mr. Badger. I'll say anything in there. But once he's freed from the responsibility of facing the electorate, all this means nothing. Do you believe it? Do you seriously believe the Labour Party's been converted to wealth creation? I think we'd have to be immensely gullible to think that.
Well, there's two interpretations of Starmer, negative ones. One is that, as you say, that he's a hidden Corbynite.
Much worse than a Corbynite. When will people ever understand? Poor old Jeremy Corbyn, steam-powered, Edwardian, Marxist-Leninist, made no secret of what it was he was up to, hadn't adjusted any of his ideas really at all. So he was basically spouting stuff which went out of style in the international left in the 1960s. Totally harmless, because you can see him coming a mile off. The modern left proceeds by subtle salami slicing and round the back methods to achieve its action. Look at what Peter Hyman wrote in The Observer a few years ago. He said that a new Labour as a project was far more revolutionary than anything Corbyn ever contemplated. I've known people in New Labour. My old friend Philip Bassett who I knew when he was on the Financial Times and the Times as a Labour correspondent. When he went just before the 1997 election to work for New Labour, we had a farewell lunch because we knew that once he worked for Blair, we wouldn't be having much to do with each other. And he said, "You have no idea how extensive this project is." And I sort of did, because I knew a bit about Blairism, but I didn't. He was quite right. I didn't know anything like how extensive it was in terms of the constitutional and the cultural and the moral changes and the educational changes which would result from it. And the country is now almost unrecognizable from what it was in 1997, but the job's not finished.
In quarter of a century, every country's changed, Peter, surely. I mean,
it's a change for the worse, Fraser.
Milton Friedman once said that Tony Blair was Blairite in language, but Thatcherite in action.
Well, then Milton Friedman must have been Gaga at the time. There's no connection.
He was pointing to the first term of the Labour government, where there were incredible restraints on spending, the economy was growing quite well. He was true to his word of not upsetting the apple cart, a word which Keir Starmer is giving right now.
This was the camouflage period, and then as soon as they were free of it, they went and let rip.
They did in the second term, right, with democratic consent in 2001 election, and again in 2005.
Quite so. And they now wish to finish the job. And one of the reasons they want to finish the jobs, they need to make constitutional changes to make what they do irreversible. This has been a Labour preoccupation since Harold Laski in the 1930s. They've always wanted to make sure that no Conservative government and no free parliament could ever reverse what they do. And they haven't been able to devise a method until now. And what the purpose of this new constitutional document is exactly that. That's what it's for.
When you look at some of the missteps the Conservative government has made in the last 4 or 5 years, missteps that you've led the field in highlighting, let's look at lockdown, for example, and everything which comes from that. Let's look at the way that the tax burden has risen to the highest level in the post-war era. Let's look at the failure of NHS reform. Let's look at the resurrection of a welfare crisis.
It's all terrible, yes.
All these things I put to you are way more serious than who happens to be a special advisor at number 10 or some constitutional tinkering. I mean, right now, what you're describing is hardly more scary than what we've already seen.
It's much more scary. What do you have in the difference between the Conservative government and a Blairite or Starmerite Labour government is the difference between masochism and sadism. It's quite horrible living under a modern post-2010, post-Cameron Conservative government, because they have basically swallowed Blairite ideas without understanding them. They maintain the Blairite legacy without, to much extent, extending it, but they maintain it. But what Starmer will do is he will re-energize the Blairite legacy, and he will continue down the path which Blair began. And this means major change.
I'm sure you've accused the Conservatives of being Blairite as well.
I have accused them of being Blairite, but Blairite by default. Cameron was open about it. He famously told a group of Daily Telegraph journalists that he was the heir to Blair, with George Osborne present. Though again, Cameron is politically almost illiterate and didn't really understand what it was he was taking on. He just wanted office, and he would have done anything for office. It's Dr. Faustus here, but he didn't understand the project, which he accepted as being permanent, and which he accepted he would not try to reverse. That was the condition under which he came into office, but he didn't know how to proceed with it or intensify it because he didn't believe in it. Whereas somebody like Keir Starmer, a veteran of Papavite Trotskyist politics and the Haldane Society in his 20s. An adult man who was in positions not just membership, but of actual activity in deeply left-wing organizations, and who is obviously a dogmatist. He has a simple test for you. He doesn't give it away very much because he knows better than to directly say, yes, I am a dogmatist. But when he was asked the other night, if a beloved member of your family was seriously ill, would you go private? To get advance them up the waiting list, and he said no. And people said, oh, he couldn't possibly mean it. I promise you that he meant it.
Right.
But he is a deeply dogmatic person. And
but for this, you point to allegiances he held in his youth. Now, I know somebody else who was a Trotskyite in his youth, and that's you.
Yes, I know, and you know it because I tell you about it.
I put to you that one can be forgiven for various phases you go through in your
years. I'm not asking to be forgiven. Well, I will tell anybody who asks me that I get immense advantage to this day from a Marxist-Leninist training. It helps me to understand politics much faster and more clearly than most people will ever do. But I'm not a Marxist-Leninist, and it's quite plain that I'm not. And I've broken with it in an entirely public way, and I lost quite a lot of friends in doing so, and there are still people walking the earth who actually hate me for that. So I don't think it's the same, really, as somebody who was a member of a very select and highly esoteric ultra-Trotskyist organization, a follower of the amazing Michaelis Raptus in his 20s, and doesn't go on about it. The other person to whom this applies is Blair himself. And Blair's Trotskyism, which he admitted to Peter Hennessy long after he'd left office, would have destroyed him had it come out during the early 90s. But he kept it secret, as just many of his cabinet. We know that many of Blair's cabinet were active members of Trotskyist or indeed communist organizations, but they never went on about it. It came out from other people.
But is it really that relevant?
Yes.
John Reed was a former Trotskyist. Alan
no,
Milburn,
John Reed was a member of the Communist Party of Great Britain.
And then you've got Alan Milburn, who was a famous communist as well. He ran a bookshop called...
Well, not famous as far as he was concerned. Did you ever hear him explain it or regret it or say anything about it?
What I did see was those to implement market reforms in public services more than the Conservatives ever dared. And I really wonder if the party political division is as great as you made out here. During the Blair years, we had market reforms in health, market reforms in schools, the academy agenda, which the Tories now, was started by Andrew Adonis and Tony Blair. And here you're telling us that the word Blair, we should all be terrified
of it. 1968. This is what the two things happened in 1968, the Prague Spring and the May events in Paris. And they turned completely the nature of the revolutionary movement away from nationalization, away from economic primacy, towards social, cultural, educational, and sexual politics, and also away from the Soviet Union. And that change has now come to fruition in Western countries. It's a tendency. It's called Eurocommunism. The Blairite theoretical journal, Marxism Today, from which the Blairite government got most of its ideas, was a Eurocommunist magazine. But most people, because as I say, they've had no Marxist-Leninist training, they don't even know what this means. The left while Deng Xiaoping was saying to get rich was glorious, Peter Mandel was saying, it doesn't bother me in the slightest if people get filthy rich. The left doesn't care about the rich anymore. And it's discovered, which anybody who looks at them can see, that the rich don't care about the left either. The rich are perfectly happy, indeed, to finance left-wing governments. It's not an issue anymore. It's examining modern politics with the categories of the 1890s.
Do you think the Conservatives deserve another 5 years in power?
Oh, deserve? No, but it's not a question of deserving. I mean, do we deserve a Labour government is the point. A vote is a practical act with measurable consequences. It's not an emotional spasm. The Conservative Party bent down in front of me in this nice study here, and I was offered a cane to beat them on the bottom, if that were legal, then I'd be happy to do so. They deserve all kinds of punishment and being made to run around the playing fields as well. But that's not the point. We don't punish them by chucking them out of office. They'll all go off and spend more time with their money. The people we punish will be ourselves. You then have to endure the next 15 or 20 years under a new Labour government.
15 and 20 years?
I should think so. They're not giving up lightly, I promise you. Votes are 16.
That'll be up to the voters. You actually think that we're looking at a vote not just for the 5 years, but for the next two decades?
Well, if the constitutional document I keep telling you about is enacted, it doesn't really matter very much, because even if they do lose office, they won't lose power.
Can you quickly talk about that then?
Fundamentally, there's a creation of a new chamber to replace the House of Lords, which I don't disagree with in principle. The House of Lords is obviously insupportable as it is now. But this is a chamber of the regions and local government. It gives an awful lot of power to the devolved nations. You'll probably know what the Sewell Convention is, which will be revised so that there will be almost no power left in Westminster to do anything to stop the devolved governments from doing anything. There will be the introduction of new things called social rights, similar to human rights, which will basically mean that the judges can intervene if they think that a policy is not giving people their social rights in housing or poverty or whatever it happens to be. And an awful lot of power will be taken from Parliament and given to the Supreme Court. which will adjudicate on these things, and also again to the big left local governments, and to various other bodies. It's quite complicated and clever. It's not an unsubtle thing, but it's very much a subtraction of power from what was formerly a sovereign parliament to other bodies, which another sovereign parliament with a different majority coming in will struggle to reverse.
So it's dismantling of the democratic apparatus.
It's dismantling the particular feature of our English or British democratic practice, that is to say, the absolute sovereignty of parliament.
In terms of, in the same way that the Human Rights Act did that?
Yeah, but more profoundly.
Okay, which Conservatives had 14 years in power to do something about, but they didn't.
Well, you're asking me to defend the Conservatives. I have no interest in
defending. Well, because there's a choice at this election, isn't it? It's either the Conservatives or Labour, and...
No, I think people have to grasp that you will not get what you vote for. Anybody who's been living consciously in this country for the past 30 or 40 years will almost never have got anything they vote for. The way to use a vote is to vote against what you don't want rather than trying to vote for what you do want. I'm very much in favour of voting against. I say vote against Labour. Wherever you live, if there's any chance of your vote making it less likely that Labour will win, do so, because otherwise you'll spend many, many years regretting it.
Right, and the Conservatives will be less bad than Labour because they won't do the constitutional reform.
Because they're flaccid. It's King Log and King Stork. They're flaccid. They have no real ideas of their own. They simply maintain Blairite ideas without knowing what they're for. They don't extend them very much. They're not energetic and active. And nor do they have any dogma of their own, so they're not driven by it.
But they're
bad, but you must accept the difference between the bad and the worse, and that one generally prefers the bad to the worse, given the choice.
There have been a great many people who have been as frustrated with you with the Conservative Party who believe that this election is as good as lost, that Keir Starmer is going to win a big majority no matter what. But what can happen here is the destruction of the Conservative Party as is. You can uproot it. Nigel Farage has been saying that this might be the election which is the end of the road for the Conservatives and the beginning of the renewal. So we need some creative destruction here. We need to flatten and people need to vote to reject and throw out all vestiges of Conservatism so it can be reborn again. Perhaps that's through a Farageist movement. I don't know if you'd be a supporter of that. Or it might be through something else. But given that you have been one of the leading, if not the leading, Conservative critics on the right, it's funny that you aren't now advising people to take this opportunity to just wipe out the old Conservative movement so a new
one
can be created.
It's not funny at all. It's perfectly rational. I take the view of Maynard Keynes. When the facts change, I change my mind. What do you do, sir? The facts in 2010, when I again lost friends and indeed lost weight, I was so frustrated by the struggle, by urging people that what they absolutely must not do was to support the Cameron putsch in the Tory party, and they should not vote Tory in 2010. The crucial, as far as I'm concerned, moment in our modern history.
You'd have kept Gordon Brown.
Oh, completely, yes. And Gordon Brown by then was played out, exhausted, and actually in several important ways to the right of David Cameron. That was no great loss, swapping David Cameron for Gordon Brown. And in the intervening period, while Gordon Brown sat glowering in Downing Street, unable to do much, then we could have reconstructed, possibly could, not would, not necessarily definitely, could have reconstructed some sort of patriotic, socially, morally and educationally conservative party. We might have failed already by 2010. After 13 years of vigorous Blairism, much of what remained of conservative Britain in education, in the academy, in the newspapers, in broadcasting, in life in general, had already been destroyed. The resources for rebuilding were thin. But we had a great deal more than the rather pathetic Thatcherite tribute bands, which are now claiming that they'll be able to replace the Conservative
Party. We now have got Nigel Farage in the Reform UK. What's the problem with him?
Well, I mean, I see one thing that's wrong with Nigel Farage, and other people can think of others. For me, it leads on to all kinds of other conclusions, is that he has spoken out in favour of the decriminalisation of marijuana. Whatever Nigel Farage is, he's not a conservative.
Right, this is a man who wants to have net zero immigration. He wants to have a fundamentally different NHS model. He is, when you heard him at the debates a few days ago, he sounded like he was running for the leadership of the Conservative Party. Now, you dismiss everything he's got to say because he wants... was semi-liberal on marijuana?
Well, I don't. I've, I don't think that Nigel Farage is what we would call a deep thinker. I don't think that he has any serious thoughts on much. I think he's an immensely cunning man, and I think he's quite a lucky man. But I don't think that he has any particular interest in the things which really concern me about the social, cultural, and moral decay of this country.
All right, but if there were Hitchensites out there, and I'm sure your school of thought here, they might have agreed with every word you've written about the Conservative Party. They might finally see in Nigel Farage and Reform UK a new party of the right, and what they basically offer is conservatism without the Conservatives.
Well, they might think that, but they don't understand the British electoral system in that case. I suppose it's conceivable that there will be such a turnover of everything that Farage ends up forming the opposition in Parliament, but much more likely, as I believe yourself speculated, would be a very, very large parliamentary Labour Party, the Liberal Democrats as the official opposition, and a ragtag and bobtail of other people scattered around the chamber being ignored. And that's the most likely result. And such a result would definitely mean two terms of Labour beyond doubt. In my view, as I say, if they can get two terms, they'll be there forever.
So your message in this 2024 election is to vote Conservative?
No, I absolutely do not say anyone should vote for anybody. You should vote against the Labour Party. Wherever you are, if your vote could prevent the election of a Labour MP, use it.
So vote Lib Dem?
If that would have that effect, yes.
If you live in Bristol Central, vote Green?
I suppose so, yeah. Anything to stop Labour. I mean, less enthusiastically. But I just don't. We don't want them in with the majority. I don't think people should be influenced by the polls. They may be right. They may be wrong. You and I have no way of knowing. Nobody has any way of knowing when the polls are right. Polls are often wrong. In recent times, polls have been completely wrong about elections in India, Norway, and Australia. In the history of this country, I've witnessed elections where the polls have been completely wrong, the most notable being 1970, where on the night of the election, June the 18th, the Times ran on its front page, three polls say Labour in with majority, and a professor at Strathclyde, who was not John Curtis, I think predicting a Labour majority of 75, and the 5 a.m. edition of the Times on June the 19th said Conservatives on course for victory. These things can be wrong. And what's more, this is a matter of self-respect. If you're a self-respecting person with a mind and a will, you should not look over your shoulder and round yourself to see how you should vote and say, oh, lots of other people are doing this, so I will. You should vote on the grounds of what you think is right.
Okay, on that note, Peter, thanks very much for joining us on Spectator TV.
It's been a joy.